Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Well, hey there, everybody. Good morning to you. We welcome back Tommy from vacation. Nice little sunburn. Always good to see on vacation if you're watching the video stream. Been there. Welcome back in. Thanks for tuning in here on KFH. Thanks for tuning in on our video streams, Facebook, YouTube, X, all the places you take in the show. We appreciate you greatly. We're going to get the latest in the sports world. It's going to be a lot of Royals talk today as we try to dig in and figure this thing out and see how much is salvageable, quite frankly, on what we can do. We're going to have our insider, Jalen Thompson, join us to, you know, talk about the games we saw, the games we'll see, and maybe more importantly, the trade deadline and what the Royals might be thinking. It's What's on Tap, brought to you by Wichita Brewing Company. WBC celebrates the 4th with $4 beers from July 2nd through July 6th at all three brew pubs. A great idea for entertaining out-of-town visitors. Wichita Brewing Company, $4 beers July 2nd through the 6th. That means Wednesday. You can get it at any of their three locations. We have Max Power producing. He's got the number at 869-1240. You can, of course, leave video comments anywhere you watch us. Facebook, YouTube, X. Thanks also for watching us always, of course, on 12 News Connected. Love that partnership. And you can also, if you're listening to us on the Odyssey app, which is available to you in a podcast form, even if you aren't listening to us live and you're listening to us there, you can leave us voice messages on the show. If you haven't done that, there's a little microphone. You can leave a message. Max can put it out over the air. Great way to get in touch with the program. And we love that you can and do listen to us whenever it's convenient for you. Tommy, welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. Glad to be here. You know, I know you said welcome back from vacation. I don't know if I would call it vacation or a trip. I think there's a difference between a vacation and a trip. A vacation signifies relaxing and just enjoying yourself. A trip is when you go on it with a bunch of kids. You know, not a whole lot of relaxing going on, but still, it was a really good time.
Yeah, I wonder about that sometimes, and then I always like, well, you know, it's time away. I don't know that. I don't know how many times in my life, I mean, I guess a handful I've ever then, if that's the definition, taken a vacation. Because if I leave town and just sit around for a while, I get real antsy and I'm not really enjoying myself. So maybe I don't even like vacation. Maybe I just like trips because I'm like, oh, I'm here. Might as well do something. You know, I can't, I'm not, and my wife is not like that, by the way. She's like, no, let's just go sit on the beach or sit by the pool. And I'm like, again, you want to do that again?
That's the way I am. I'm like your wife. Like, I would rather just like sit and relax and not do anything.
Like, but yeah, you can do that at home.
Like, but not with like not with scenic lake views and all of that. I'd rather sit in a rocking chair on the balcony and just look out at the lake and not have to worry about anything, not have to do anything, don't have any obligations, no schedule, know where I've got to be. That's what I like. That's what I'm into.
Yeah, I think I might be in the minority on this, but it's time away is great, no matter how you define it, whether it's a trip, vacation, or whatever. It's always nice to be away. I think everyone agrees on that. And you had a nice time. You got to play a little golf, right?
You did
for all the golf people out there that might get a little jealous of you.
I did. I played Paynes Valley. We went to the Table Rock area, Big Cedar Lodge, that whole area down there. Tiger Woods has a course out there called Paynes Valley that he designed and put together. Beautiful out there. Great golf. Love it. And yeah, it was great. It was a good time.
Where was Tiger there? Did you say hi?
If he was there, he stayed far away from me. I don't believe he was there. No, he doesn't get out there very often. I don't think, but he designed the course and it's beautiful out there.
Yeah, it's cool. I saw some of the pictures Tommy sent. He tweeted a little bit. You can check those out. Pretty wild, pretty great when you get out on. Now that's vacation. That's
relaxing. Oh, for sure. 100%.
At least that. Yeah. You know, that piece of it. It's a lot of fun. We're glad to have you back. You didn't miss much with the Royals.
Yeah.
Hoo boy. Hey, maybe what'll cure what ails them is playing a Monday, which they'll do today. No more Mondays off. It'll be late baseball, which is always great. We'll be up late with the Royals, but it's getting to a point where nothing's out of the, you know, and it's not like they're not dead or anything like that. It's just this, you know, this trade deadline and the decisions that they're going to have to make become fascinating. They are of the contending teams, and you might even say that the Orioles have sort of played themselves back into a quote-unquote contending team. They're 7 games back of the wild card. The Royals, though, of the other ones, and remember there are 12 of 15 teams in the American League that are really square in the mix of this, the Royals are still only 4.5 games back, Tommy, of that, and they play the team that they're chasing by 4.5 games for 4 games to start this week. So as annoying, let's call it, as the month of June was for Kansas City, especially at home, inside that clubhouse, and again, we'll have Jalen Thompson a little later in the show to talk through this with us, inside that clubhouse, honestly, like, not a lot changes. You just have to play better baseball. And we'll get into all of this and some of the things of the week. I was way off. Last time you were on, I was like, I kind of feel like they're going to have a big week. They did not. They won 1 game on the homestand. But they're only 4.5 games back. That's what is making this so crazy. They can have a terrible week, and they lost a game in the standings. I believe last week when we started, they were 3.5 games back. I'm pretty sure. And now after a 1-5 homestand and a 1 win at home month of June, they're 4.5 games back.
Yeah, and it can very easily feel like the definition of insanity, right? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. That's the way that it feels like the Royals are operating right now, where it makes you want to slam your head against a brick wall, because it's like nothing changes. They can't do anything different. They're trotting out the same lineup basically every night. Bottom of the lineup may be a little bit different here and there, but it's by and large the same starting lineup every night, same order, same rotation, same pitcher, same personnel, same everything. And you're just like hoping and grasping at straws that they can figure something out and get things turned around, because until there are reinforcements that come out there from outside of the organization, and who knows if that's even going to happen, who they've got is who they've got. And, you know, with every homestand, that goes the way that this one did, 1-5 in this homestand, 0-6 in the one before, it makes it that much more difficult to think that they are going to be buyers at the trade deadline, even though they're hanging on and not out of the woods, you know, for a wild card spot. But it does make it hard to think that they're going to go all in. So it's going to probably be the guys that we've come to know and appreciate and just like cross our fingers and hope that they can start producing.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. Let's take the discussion there. We've got some comments coming in. We'll dig in a little bit, look at them. I know the month of June's not over and they play one more, but it's a good day to take a look back at the month and sort of discuss some of this. Really, really rough week for Jack Caglione. We'll get into that a little bit as well. Hey, morning's here at KFH. Staff enjoys a great cup of coffee from Prairie Fire Coffee. Always appreciate their support and their coffee at the studio and all across the Odyssey studios. It's Albrecht and Caster. We're back on a Monday. Don't go away. We'll dig into the Royals' troubles last week when we return.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
Sports Daily is on KFH.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It is Sports Daily on a Monday. Tommy Caster, Jacob Albrecht, Max Power producing the program. We've got that KFH hotline open for you at 869-1240 all morning long. If you'd like to join the program, we also have some video comments already about the Royals. Jacob, a lot to get into to continue that conversation today.
Yeah, look, it's going to be a very dominant topic, at least for the next couple few weeks. Hopefully, it's because they start to play better. Because again, bad week at home, you're 4.5 games back. I think they lost a game. Maybe it's two, but I think it was just one over the week, which leads Rick to say, we keep saying it's only 4.5 games, but there are more teams ahead of them in the wild card race. They're not getting past all of them with this team. There are two different things in that comment. You either don't think they're good enough to get there or not, but to say they can't make up 4.5 games is crazy. They still have 3 months of baseball to play. Are we even to the halfway point yet, right? Like, yes, they can absolutely make that up. We have crossed the halfway threshold. The Royals have crossed it by 3 games. Yes, they can absolutely make up 4.5 games. I don't care how many teams are ahead of them. They're playing Seattle, who they're chasing directly, 4 games to start this week. So they sure they can. They can absolutely do that. The question is, can this team do that? And I think that's the discussion that over the next month is going to dominate, because they have decisions to make. Now, I still think that they will probably both be sellers and contenders. I don't know that I think they're going to buy unless in some trade it brings them a piece that can help them this year. But I do think they're going to have to be willing to listen to offers on players like Seth Lugo, because you could trade Seth Lugo and still be a contender this year. You're not like mortgaging. Now, they could, in theory, go out and sell every asset they have. And at that point, you're like, okay, they're sellers. But if they trade Seth Lugo, who's been rumored a bunch, it's probably not a typical selling situation. It's a team that's in this purgatory that the Royals find themselves in, not being able to turn down an offer that's overwhelming. So we'll get with Jalen Thompson on the latest there, because there's been a ton of rumors around him. But Tommy, they just can't hit. Still, they cannot hit. And they started the month of June okay. They end the month of June as the second worst team in baseball scoring runs for the month. It's just not, I don't know what else they can do to make that better. Jack Caglione was 1-for-21 on the week. That was their big move. And I don't know that there's anything that it's not the same as when MJ Melendez or Hunter Renfroe struggling, like, well, get him out of there. You have to let Cags work through this at the big league level. That was always one of the big risks with calling him up. Again, I'm not going to be revisionist. I think they made the right calling him up, because at that time they were A, desperate for it, and B, they were still right in the mix. I think when they called him up, they were maybe had the third wild card spot. But again, the difference in games hasn't been that great, but you're going to have to let him work through it. You can't sit him down. You can't really send him back down. You can. They absolutely could send him down for a little
bit. I think that sends the wrong message. That's the wrong thing to do, because I think that, you know, you want to like wave a white flag on the season. That's what you do. You send Jack Caglione down. Even trading a piece away like Seth Lugo doesn't wave a white flag on the season. But if you move Jack Caglione back down to the minors, that waves a white flag on the season. And it shows that the Royals feel like they made the wrong decision in what they did with him and bringing him up. I do think also that it's important to remember that in a lot of ways, the Royals' hand was forced a little bit with Jack Caglione. Like, the amount of fan uproar about the fact that he wasn't with the big league squad, I think that had a lot to do with it. And I think that the Royals also recognized, like, they were caught between a rock and a hard place. You had this guy absolutely raking in the minors and was dominating the headlines in minor league baseball with the moonshots he was hitting, while your big league squad couldn't get a single run across game after game after game. So in some ways, the organization's hand was forced in bringing him up earlier than what they wanted to. And unfortunately, now you're kind of stuck with him. And honestly, I don't blame the organization for that. Like, I don't blame J.J. Piccolo for that move. I don't blame Matt Quatrero for that move. Their hand was forced. And can you imagine the fever pitch if he still wasn't part of the big league squad? Like, if he wasn't there right now and was still raking in the minors? Because it's not like the offensive woes have gone away. And I warned about that when they called him up. It was like, look, everybody's got to pump the brakes a little bit because he can't be the savior of this entire team. He's a rookie. He's never played at this level before. Even if he has success, which he hasn't individually yet, even if he does have individual success, he's one guy in a lineup. He's not going to change the fortunes of the entire lineup, and he hasn't. And so I do think I think everybody's got to recognize the context around Cags in the lineup, but they absolutely can't make a move on him, and they're not going to.
Yeah, no, I agree that they won't, and they shouldn't. I do disagree. I think they could. Look, if they had somebody who was just crushing it in the minor leagues that they could pull up and give Cags a minute to catch.
They already did that. I mean, like, they did that with Cags.
No, I'm saying with Cags, like, if they had, I'm not saying they will or they should. I'm saying they could because they have the options, and he's struggling. And I think, like, you can help him out by giving him a break because you can call him right back up. I don't think they should. Let me just say that for the fifth time. I don't think they should, but I think they could. The problem is, it doesn't really matter at the moment, right? Like, it's not like it was when they called him up and they felt like they were one bat away from breaking it open. It doesn't feel that way at all right now. So how much of a difference are you really going to make by doing that? And honestly, like, we're going to have to guess at this because, and maybe Jalen, you got to know what the conversations are like with him. How's his psyche? How's he doing? How is he wired? What's it going to do if we sat him down or sent him down? Like, could he even handle that? That's a lot to, you're already asking too much, honestly, of him. And again, we all thought this was the right move, but you're asking too much of him to begin with. You got to let him work through it at the big league level. The problem for the team is, boy, they could really use his bat. They can't score any runs. It doesn't make a lot of sense why they can't score any runs. It's by and large the same team it was a year ago, who was the most clutch in baseball and now is the most unclutch in baseball. And maybe to the people that think clutch isn't really a thing, that tells you it's just, it'll all balance itself out. But again, like, all of this being said, it was a really bad week for him. They get to go on the road. They've been much better on the road than they have been at home. And they're right there. So it really comes down to, separate from like the Seth Lugo conversation, do you think this team has another hot streak in them at some point or two? It doesn't have to be 18 of 20 or whatever it is, but can they go win 7 out of 10 a couple of times the rest of the way and then just sort of float around and flutter around the rest of the time? That might be enough to get in at this point. And when you look at it that way, that the reality is, like, yeah, if 500 is the benchmark, which, boy, it sure looks like it's going to be close to that, right? Maybe 84, 85 wins will get you into a wild card spot. If that's the benchmark, it doesn't take a lot to get to that point.
We
just crossed the halfway point. How many games under 500 are the Royals right now? They are
six games
500.
Yeah.
So they would have to be 9 games above 500, essentially, I think is a pretty fine benchmark. 3 games over 500, which would be what? 81, 2, 3, 84 wins gets you into, let's say 84 wins gets you in. That means you got to be 9 games over 500 for a half of a season. There is so much baseball to play. Then I think you can look at it, if you're the front office, and say, well, yeah, we can absolutely do that.
But give me something concrete and real, an indication that shows that they will do that. Can they? Sure they can. They've done it. They did it earlier this season. But right now, there's nothing. And it's been this way for the last month. There hasn't been anything to me that would indicate that they can go on a sustained hot streak and play baseball, even at 500, much less 9 games over 500, to get to that 84 win mark that you just mentioned. There's nothing concrete.
Well,
there's nothing.
This is what
it's like grasping at straws and saying like, yeah, they can do it. Well, they've not shown that they can recently at all.
This is what I warned you about. You're getting so mad at me when I was saying, look, this offense is a major problem, even when they're pitching well and they were in their hot streak. And I'm like, it's not sustainable. It's not. So there's no way they can do what they need to do, scoring 3 runs a game. I don't care how good their pitching is. It's not sustainable, and it hasn't been. And in June, their team ERA is down to 4.18. That's not, I mean, which is a kind of middle.
And I think going back to that, though, going back to that time period, yeah, it wasn't overall sustainable. You were right about that. And I know I was getting really worked up about that at the time. I didn't think that it would fall off a cliff the way that it did. I thought, okay, maybe if it comes back down to earth a little bit, that's to be expected. The pitching had been elite and they were really picking up the slack of the offense. And I think that you were right. I mean, I'll tell you that right now. You were right about the fact that you said it wasn't sustainable, but I don't think either one of us believed that it was going to fall off a cliff.
No, and I don't even think it's fallen off a cliff. This isn't even an exercise on the pitch. The pitching staff in June was very average, right? It wasn't terrible, but it was average. The problem is it had to be elite for them to do that. Like best in baseball. And that was the part where it was like, they're not going to keep that up over 162 games. So if they don't start scoring more runs, there's no way that works. So the pitching has, and listen, I also think the pitching has gotten better the last 2 weeks, and it will, and this will be an above average pitching staff, especially starting rotation, you know, trades notwithstanding and who they trade away or don't trade or whatever. But, you know, this current group is still a really good and solid pitching staff. The problem is the offense is the exact same. And so when the pitching staff has a month where they give up 4 runs a game, which isn't even that crazy, you can't win any games. That's the issue. And that was the issue then, because it went back to last season. Like, I also don't want to forget that September was really rough on the Royals offensively last year.
Yeah.
So when they came out of the gate struggling, it's like, looks like we saw at the end of the year.
And you bring up a really good point, and it's something that is not being talked about enough right now at the very end of June this season, is that I think the major issue in all of this is the fact that the Royals, by and large, sat on their hands during the offseason and said, hey, we're gonna roll
with the lineup. They did,
we're gonna roll with this lineup and we're gonna run it back and see what we can do. You know, I know like the phrase run it back gets associated with the Chiefs a lot, and for good reason. Like they ran back basically their entire team. The Royals they don't have the personnel like the Chiefs did by and large, right? And so I think that like they decided to run it back. When you entered the season with Hunter Renfro and MJ Melendez in the corner outfield positions, and they didn't do anything to address that. I mean, you know, I remember saying in February, in March, they need to do something else for the bottom of that lineup. I was concerned about the bottom of the lineup. It was like, yeah, you can make a trade for Jonathan India. They did do that. They addressed leadoff. They addressed bullpen. They brought in Estevez. That's great. They did all of that.
They re-signed Waka. They brought Lorenzen back.
But as far as the bottom half of that lineup is concerned, once you got like Salvi below that, they didn't make any moves, and they needed to. They needed to address that big time. And we knew that going all the way back to September. As you mentioned, it was a rough offensive end of the season for the Royals. They entered the playoffs last year, and the question was, are they going to be able to score enough runs to be able to keep up in the playoffs? And they were able to do that against Baltimore. They certainly couldn't do that against the Yankees in the divisional series. And so like that was a challenge for sure for the Royals.
That's what I guess, you know, for me too, like, because you're absolutely right, they needed to add another bat. I don't want to act like this run for the front office and the difference in the off seasons the last two versus what they were before. Like, yes, they needed another one, but they have spent, I believe it's over the last 2 years, more money than any team in baseball through free agency over the last 2 years. And most of those moves have been pretty good. Jonathan India is not working out, but it was a nice effort, right? It was a fine effort. they spent big money to put this pitching staff together. They make that trade. They added Mark Canna, which was it wasn't a nothing burger. It was a shot. It took a shot. I'm not sure what else they could have done, I guess, is where I'm going with this as far as the offense goes. Like, I'm not sure what else was out there that was attainable. And that's what makes this trade deadline really interesting, because you've got a front office that has gotten most of what it's done the last two off seasons very right. Most of it. I think we all thought Jack Caglione would be a spark for this lineup. It hasn't been. So now they have to go back to the drawing board again to try and find some reinforcement. That's where something like a Seth Lugo trade can get really interesting. Can you afford to a guy who's probably you're not going to be able to bring back like you did Waka? So that guy who everybody thinks is awesome and is awesome becomes one of the most attractive trade pieces out there. There's a lot of rumors, and we talked about this last week while you were gone, with a guy like Jarren Duran for the Red Sox, an offensive piece who has tapered off a bit this year, but is still better than any outfielder the Royals have offensively if they were to trade for him today, who has a ton of team control, who has put together all-star level seasons. Does a trade like that make sense? It sure does. Now, the problem for that trade is the Red Sox are trying to dump. They don't want Seth Lugo. So then it's like, okay, well, you can't just go like one for one there. And then you have to start to be, you know, then, and this is the conversation we had last week. Would you trade Noah Cameron for a guy like Jarren Duran? My answer is absolutely I would. It would probably take more than Noah. It would take Noah Cameron probably in one of the catching prospects. I would still trade that for Jarren Duran. I think that the Royals are going to be in this really interesting position. But if you trade Noah Cameron, can you also trade Seth Lugo and contend this year? So this will be a fascinating deadline, because I think there is some urgency to move Lugo because he will be so valuable on the market. You have the pitching that you could still contend even if you traded him, but are you going to be able to find a big league ready bat for him, or are you going to have to look at trading somebody like Noah Cameron, who's a part of the future, to bring in a bat? Like, they really are going to have to play both ends of the game here at the deadline.
Well, and what's the one area on this roster where they do have more depth than any other place? And that's starting pitching. They have a lot of depth,
right,
at the starter role. And, you know, you've got a guy, there've been a couple of guys that have dealt with injuries that, you know, we don't know exactly where they're at in their recovery, but Alec Marsh is still on the team and Kyle Wright is working back from injury. And, you know, you've got some other guys, you've got depth there at starting pitching. And so, if you are going to make a move, that would be an area to do that. I think that you can, depending on the right move, and JJ Piccolo has shown that he's willing to do things like this, you can make a move with one of your starters and sell that one piece, but then get better at the margins. That's really where they need to be. They need to get better at the margins. And if you can have a piece like Seth Lugo that you can move and be able to gain assets in return, whether they're big league ready or not. We know that the Royals farm system overall is not particularly deep.
We're looking at the Royals. We are trying to keep you off the ledge, Royals fans. I really think, though, like, you don't even have to just watch them. If they get a little heater, they're going to climb right back into it. What do you think, Tom? If I asked you right now, do you think at any point the rest of the way the Royals will be in ownership of one of the three wild card spots, what would you say?
Probably not. I'm going to say no on that. And it's not that I don't think that, you know, the other teams in the American League will make it possible for the Royals to get there. I certainly think that these teams are beating up on each other enough to where the Royals, even if they continue playing the way that they are, will still probably hang around within striking distance of the wild card. I'm just not sure that there's a whole lot that has shown me that they can get over that hump to take that wild card spot, whichever one it is, and hang on to it. I don't see them. I know you projected out, like, what if they went 9 games over 500 the rest of the way and won 84 games? I mean, that's a nice thought. It's a nice wish. I'm just not sure that they've shown anything recently that shows that they can do that. They're 6 games under 500 right now. I don't see them making a 15-game swing with the current roster that they have right now.
See, I think, and I'm just saying, like, at any point, could they get it. Not will they have it.
No.
But like at any point,
I don't
will
think
we
so.
Say, so I would say if they don't do anything at the deadline, the answer for me might be yes, because that would mean they'd still have Seth Lugo the rest of the way, essentially. Again, I'm not advocating for that. I don't know what I'm advocating on that just yet. But it's hard for me to believe that the team that has been so streaky can't get on at least, you know, like half of what they had in that crazy win streak they had and make some noise for a week or two and be there. So I would say 50-50.
So who are they going to, who are they going to play better than down the stretch? Like, who are they going to leap,
who do I think they have leapfrog, a better roster than?
Who are they going to leapfrog in the teams that are above them in the wild card standings right now? Like I've gone through that list. I'm not sure.
So
there
I
are,
think they're a better team than the Angels, right? So that's one of them.
Okay.
I think that they are going to be a better team than Boston, who's trying to sell everything they've got. So that's two. I think they're at least on par, if not slightly better than the Twins. That's three. So that's three of them. The Rangers are kind of in the same situation as the Royals. Good roster, but they're just not consistently playing well. I still don't. And look, I know the Guardians are always there, but on paper, they don't scare me. So the three that I think on paper are probably better are the three that they're chasing that currently occupy the spots, Tampa, Toronto, and Seattle. But I think they're at least as good as all the other teams that are underneath those three.
Yeah, but it'd be one thing if they had one or two teams to leapfrog in the wild card to get.
And that's Rick's point. And
they've
I
got
get that
six.
Point.
There are six teams that right. they've got to be better than to even get to the third wild card spot.
So that's. I think that's why you have to look at it not in the race itself, but in the Royals versus the Royals, right? Can the Royals versus the Royals get on a stretch where they finish let's call it the second half, or let's call it starting in the month of July, can they be above 500 the rest of the season? I think you start there. The Royals versus the Royals, not thinking about anybody else. And if you think that is possible, I think it's definitely possible, then you can start there and say, well, they're going to be in the mix if they can do that, right? Regardless, because the reality is the Royals aren't the only team we're doing this for. They're all this way. Only two of those teams, Tommy, have positive run differentials, and the Red Sox aren't going to because they're trading everything away. Like, of all of those teams we mentioned, the only one with a positive run differential is Texas. Even Toronto, who owns that spot, isn't. The reality, and this is the good news for the Royals, is none of these teams are very good. Tampa looks like it might be because they got a lot of really young players that are kind of hitting their stride. And Seattle can pitch like crazy, and Seattle probably is really good. And that's who they play next, by the way. But the reality is none of these teams are very good. Like, the Royals aren't the only ones. They're sitting in a lot of cities across the country having the same conversations we're having right now. I can promise you they're having it in Minneapolis. You know, with the Twins, and they're having it. You know, the Angels, they're not even talking about the Angels because nobody buys that, but they're having this conversation in Cleveland, who's gone 3-7 over their last 10, same as the Royals, right? Like, all of these teams are kind of the same, and that's your optimist take. And why I think it's kind of it's going to be a battle of attrition on who sucks the least, possibly to get into the wild card. Again, I think Seattle and Tampa are probably better teams today. Toronto, maybe. They've got some good young players, but I think Vladimir Guerrero Jr. just got hurt. Like, I don't know about Toronto yet, but there's going to be an opportunity. Now, if the Royals continue to toil around and they can't do anything, then obviously they're not going to. Again, I wouldn't put it, and I making the wild card, I would say, is less than 50%. At any point in the second half, being in the third wild card spot, I think it's probably about 50%, because they're only 4.5 games back right now.
But again, that flies in the face of what you just talked about. Like, it's not about how many games they're back; it's about the number of teams that are in front of them. Can they beat themselves?
I do think it's about how many games.
No, I agree with Rick on this. It's about the number of teams that are in front of them, because even if and look, one of the things that has happened while the Royals have been struggling. Two of the other teams in their division have also been struggling mightily also, the Guardians and the Twins. So, yeah. Like, they're right there also, and those are two other teams that thought they would be contending for an AL Central crown this season before Detroit just ran away with it. So, I mean, that a lot of teams are dealing with a lot of the same things right now. that's great. Like, I get that logic. I get that argument that it's not just the Royals, it's everybody. But then the question becomes, who's going to raise their hand and through the back half of the season get to a point to where they can say, look, like, we have underachieved and underperformed so far. We need to, you know, it's such a logjam. We need to rise above that, and we need to claim one of these wild card spots. And out of all the teams that are in front of them right now in the wild card race, I don't know. I don't think that the Royals are, I don't think they have the firepower right now. They've not at least shown that recently that sure. they can get up and grab it. Like, they can, it's going to take somebody, a team, to take that wild card spot. Like, the Royals aren't going to be able to just be mediocre and just, you know, have 0-6 homestands or 1-5 homestands.
No, I agree
and have
with that.
Any prayer whatsoever of crawling their way back into the wild card hunt. It's not going to happen.
I agree that they've got to play better. They can't play like they're playing now. The reason I don't think it's as much about there's so many teams is because I just don't think any of those teams are very good. Right. So it's not like. Like there
and
are,
that's,
there
that's
are,
great. That may very well be true, but the Royals are not very good right now. Like
obviously, the Royals, for any of this conversation, we have to envision the Royals playing better. I mean, there's no question about that. But I think in a lot of seasons, when you have that much ground to make up, it's too much to overcome because there's so many teams, and you can just count on like listen, a handful of these teams are going to also be good. I look at that list right now. And Toronto is the really interesting one for me. I think Tampa and Seattle are going to be good in the second half. I don't know about Toronto, but of all the other teams they would have to jump ahead of to be in the fourth place spot, I mean, do you really think any of those teams are going to do what we're saying if the Royals do, they could play back? Like, are any of those teams going above 500 the rest of the way? Maybe Texas.
Maybe Cleveland. I can see Cleveland doing that. I think
Cleveland's got a worse run differential, by the way, right now than the Royals do.
I think Minnesota could do that. It's going to be interesting depending on what the Red Sox do. I know they want to sell.
Is what I'm saying making any sense, though? Like, none of these teams are good. So, like, if, you know, that's they're all ahead of the Royals, but like the Royals, they're not playing well. But I think the difference between the Royals and them is I think all of those teams,
that's
Texas
great.
Notwithstanding, that's, the Royals have a better roster.
Yeah, like, look, that's great. That's great that none of these teams above them are good. The Royals aren't good either. And so at the end of the day, if you want to get your way into, find your way into a wild card spot, you've got to control your own destiny. You've got to win your own games. And so we can talk all day long about how many games they're back, who's ahead of them, how good those teams are in front of them. If the Royals aren't winning their own games, it's a moot point. It doesn't matter.
It's all going to be the Royals versus the Royals. I don't think if the Royals have a great stretch, they're going to be unlucky in the sense that, oh man, but so did XYZ. It's the Royals versus the Royals. And if you're looking for a reason to not, again, to step away from the cliff, if you're a Royals fan today, that's all it is. Like, it's just the Royals. I think you can ignore everything else around them and just it's the Royals versus the Royals right now. They just have to play up to their potential. Up next is 4 at Seattle. I'm glad they don't have a day off, quite frankly. So it's 4 at Seattle and then 4 at Arizona. Arizona has had just an unbelievably unfortunate run of injuries lately. Seattle, the issue with that series is going to be you're going to face really good pitching, really good pitching. In that series. So that's daunting, certainly, when you think about Kansas City. But they are coming off of a tough road trip where they played every game they played in extra innings against Texas with no days off now. So you can think about that if you're a Royals fan today. And then that Arizona series, that becomes an opportunity. Even though Arizona's record won't be bad, they won't have Corbin Carroll. They've had a ton of injuries. So here we go. And we know the Royals have played much better on the road. Maybe we're a week off. Maybe that decent week I thought they were going to have last week happens this week. Who knows? But this will be a pretty entertaining week of baseball if you can stay up late, because a lot of these games are going to be very late at night. 8:40 first pitches, except for the July 3rd game, which is a 9:10 first pitch. You get a couple of day games at least over the weekend, but every other game is going to be up late with the Royals. You get that Prairie Fire coffee ready, Tommy, because we're going to need it this week.
I wonder, like, when we see the Royals out on the West Coast, I mean, remember when they went to Texas a couple weeks ago and then they went to San Diego? Like, that was a good road trip. There's something about them playing in Kauffman right now that's not working for them.
It's not working.
That I do think a four-game stretch in Seattle, the fact that they're going to be on the road for a while away from all of it, that I think that does benefit them a little bit. I agree with you. Them not having a day off today, I think, is good also. Like, shake it off and hit the road and get away from the home pressures and all of that. And go do what you need to do against a team that is ahead of you in the wild card race, has currently the third spot, the third wild card spot that you're going to want, you're going to need. Go and take at least three or four from them. That's what you've got to be thinking of when you start this four-game set tonight.
They catch Wu Gilbert and Kirby in this series. I know Kirby's coming back from injury and has been a little slow going. He's been much better lately. They're going to need to pitch in this series. This is very unlikely to be the series the offense wakes up. Maybe that happens against Arizona. They're going to really have to pitch in this series. Tonight it is Waka. They get Waka, Lorenzen, Cameron, and Lugo. Feel pretty good about that. Again, the Royals rotation is so deep, you don't really care, quite frankly. You just roll them out there. And we'll see if they can hang with Seattle, who I do think is one of the actual good teams that are in the mix for this thing, in the American League. All right, we'll come back, we'll turn the page, we'll look elsewhere. LeBron James doing it again? Is he went out of LA? Sounds like he might. After all that with his son, we'll get into that story and more. We return on the other side at Sports Daily. Don't go away.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrock and Tommy Gester.
Forgive me if you're watching the video stream here. Just had a huge spider walk across the table, and as I went to grab a Kleenex to go for the kill, he or she has disappeared.
Uh-oh.
So somewhere within 6 inches of me is a massive spider walking around on my desk. How are you with spiders, Tommy?
I don't love them, but I'm not terrified of them either. I'll let you know, like, if I see him crawling on your shoulder, I'll give you a heads up on that. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not terrified of them. Oh, there he is. I found him. All right, you little sucker. I'm not losing sight of you here. I'm not terrified of them. I don't like them either. My wife has a legitimate case of arachnophobia.
Really?
Oh my God. Like, it is illogical how scared of spiders she is. Like, it's wild. And so it's fun to mess with her about it, but B, I just can't, like, I come from the land of tarantulas. Like, these little spiders are like, whatever, dude. What is that reference, Max? Is that from Arachnophobia? Did you have Arachnophobia on? Boy, I haven't seen that movie in a long, long time.
The Who, Boris the Spider. Oh my God.
What? Max, what the hell are you talking about?
That's The Who. They were a band.
They're a band. You've heard of The Who.
The Who.
I've heard of The Who.
Boris the Spider.
Boris the Spider? Is this a music video?
No, it's
Did they
a
have
song.
Music videos? It's a song. Was TV a thing back when The Who were cool, Max?
Oh, good. Okay. Quick, go listen to Bruno Mars and his auto-tune.
Oh, now you're going to... That becomes now a shot at Bruno Mars? Like, what is happening?
Okay.
We're off the rails. I lost him again.
You need to keep eyes on that spider, because that could end up really bad.
I don't want him to like crawl in my lap.
I can handle spiders. I can do bugs. I can do snakes. I don't have an issue with it. What I can't handle a vermin. I can't do mice. I can't do snakes. Rats. I can't do anything like that.
You're scared of a mouse?
Oh, really? I can't, because they're like disease riddled vermin. Like I can't. If I see a mouse, like I would jump up on the table. I can't do that.
What?
But really? I'll take spiders on all day. I'll take bugs on all day. I'll do all of that.
How do you feel about snakes?
I can handle a snake. I'm not scared of snakes at all.
Snakes are the ones that I despise. So this spider annoys me because he got away and I haven't had time to dispose of him. I'm more annoyed than anything. I don't like the idea of a very poisonous spider. Like we had brown recluses at a house we used to live at. I'm not a big fan of that. Never really been around black widows. Prefer to keep it that way. That kind of thing. Like these wolf spiders don't. They're fine. They kill mosquitoes. I hate mosquitoes more than I hate spiders. How about that? But so the vermin don't really bother me. I don't think. Like we went to New York City and the rats are running across the street.
I can't do that.
That didn't bug me. Mice don't bug me. Snakes bug me. And snakes don't bug me necessarily. I guess I don't know if I would say I'm afraid of snakes. I hate them, hate them, hate them, because I grew up around rattlesnakes. Like everywhere we'd go, I lived in the country in the Texas. Like you didn't lift up a rock without knowing there was going to be a rattlesnake.
You got to shake your boots out before you put them on.
Yes, absolutely. So we had a rattlesnake den one time. Like snakes could all die and I would be okay. I had a roommate with a snake one time. That was not cool. Like he had a snake. Like he's like, why do you have a snake, dude? Like, what are you doing with a snake? And he moves in with this snake. And I told him, I'm like, I'm going to tell you right now. Like I hate snakes. I don't ever want to. Like he would keep dead mice in the freezer.
Yeah, I can't. I can't.
But not
do
just
that.
Didn't
I'm
ask
not,
anybody.
I'm
just
not going to.
All of a sudden,
yeah.
You go in for a popsicle, and it's like, oh, there's a pack of dead mice. That's really neat.
Little mouse sickle.
So there's this snake, and I'm not kidding. He also had a cat, and the cat at one point lifted the lid off of the thing because that's what cats do. And the snake wasn't in the cage. I got home. I was the only person there. There's three of us that lived in the house in this glass box, and the lid has been lifted off, and the snake's not in the box.
And the cat was in the snake.
Come home, because if I find the snake before you find the snake, I'm going to kill the snake. Like, this isn't some, like, oh, here he is. Let me just grab. I was like, I'll kill him. Like, if I see that snake in my room, I'll kill him. Because I would kill any snake. I hate them. Like, they killed our animals. They bit dogs and horses. Like, they can all die. I hate snakes. Sorry if there's any snake fans out there. I don't mean to offend you, but I kind of do mean to offend you. It's really weird to think snakes are cool. They're the devil. Aren't they? Yeah, they're the devil in the Bible. Like, they're the devil. They can die. Hate snakes. Hate snakes. You probably like them because they eat mice. Which
well, yeah. I don't have a problem. I didn't grow up around rattlesnakes, so I don't have that context. I don't have an issue with them. I don't love them. But a lot of times, like, I'll just kind of let them live their life. As long as they're not bothering me, like, they can go and have a good time. I cannot do vermin. I can't do mice.
That's interesting.
I can't. And I, like, also, like, I've got, you know, I knew people growing up that had ferrets and gerbils and guinea pigs. Like, I can't do any of that. Like, to me, that's just, like, nasty little, like, again, disease-filled.
Oh, that can be really cute. What vermin. About, like, a bunny rabbit?
No, nope. Like, nope. I mean, like, a bunny rabbit is different.
It's not that different than a gerbil.
Sure it is. A bunny is absolutely different than a gerbil.
Which ones are the big fat ones that have the cute little teeth? Hamsters?
Hamsters, yeah.
Guinea pig?
Hamsters are nasty. You ever had to clean out a hamster cage?
No,
oh
no! I
just
wouldn't
be
have
grateful
hamster.
Your kids are not asked for a hamster, because
I got my kids a cat. And that's, we're going to be good with a dog and a cat. They won't have any of these other fun adventure creatures. Famous last words. I didn't think we were getting another cat either.
Mice
spider?
And Jacob's house.
Spider's
going to
end up in my coffee.
Well, it's
mug.
True. Yeah. And like, that's the other thing is I don't like cats. And, but you would think I would like cats because cats get mice.
Right. They hunt them.
But I don't like cats either.
I've always said I'm cat agnostic. I really enjoy like outside cats, like cats that are strays that'll kind of come chill with you. Like I'm not anti cat at all. I just never thought we'd have another one when ours died last year. But the kids had different plans and they win, of course. So now we have another cat. He's pretty cool. He's not bad. I got him mostly for my 12-year-old dog to give her a buddy. And now they're playing every day. And I'm like, all right, mission accomplished. The dog is acting like a puppy again around the cat. So we're good. I like cats. I like all animals except
Jacob.
Snakes. They can all die.
Does your cat like knock everything off if you have?
He will.
One
I
of
mean,
the
he's
two
a
cats
cat.
I have, if it sees something, it has to knock it off.
He will. I mean, I think that's one of those things. Like you just have to. I think it's funny because I think I have the personality of a dog, and my wife has the personality of a cat, and so like it's just like you know it all cats are going to do that. They're going to mess with you. They're gonna do whatever they want and they're gonna mess with you and they can be really fun too. I'm fine with cats. I'm not pro or I don't like bad cats, but I don't like bad dogs either. I'm more patient for a bad dog than a bad cat. I will say that. Like I got no time for a bad cat. I'll still probably love on a bad dog. I just wouldn't want it to be my dog. We'll see. I might drink a spider. I lost the spider. It could crawl in my coffee cup. If my wife was down here, Tommy, she would probably leave the house. If she knew that a spider had at some point crawled across my desk and I didn't kill it, she'd probably try to move.
She'd probably set the house on fire. With you inside of it.
That's not far off. When we were dating, I'll never forget. She like in a panic calls me. She's like, "You have to come up right now." She was in her apartment. I get there and she's like standing on a couch and a table. And we have these cans. Have you ever seen these cans of bug spray that are like missile launchers?
Sure, yeah.
Like the street. So she's got one of those cans and I walk in the door and I'm like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And she's like, I can't look at you. I can see it and I can't lose it. And I'm like, well, don't, you know, like you don't need to like douse your apartment in this bug spray. I was like, where is it? And like, it's over there. And of course it's just like a wolf spider.
Yeah.
You walk over and you step on it. You're like, all right, like crisis averted. Like you're humongous. It's this little spider. You just step on him.
I think
no,
the
she,
difference.
She was ready to burn that place down.
I used to like. I knew people, and I did live out in the country for a while when I was a kid, and so we always had spiders and we had mice and you know things like that. I think the difference why I was always okay with like stepping on a spider is because they squish. Like you grab them with a Kleenex and they squish. I knew people that would like. Get a mouse and like step on it to kill it. And like, you're hearing like bones crunching and like, I can't do that. Like that makes me sick to my stomach. Like that's, I remember one time we moved into a new house, in the country when I was a teenager, we had mice in our basement and, it was a brand new house that my parents had built. And there were mice in the basement and they put out glue traps to get the mice. And I remember coming home and my bedroom was in the basement. And there was a mouse that had chewed its own legs off to get off that glue trap and was scooting on the basement carpet with no legs. And I'm like, I can't do that. Like, I cannot. I'm not a fan of that. Give me a spider any day of the week and I'll take care of them.
What about a tarantula?
Oh, they're fuzzy. They're cute and fuzzy.
All right, Tom. LeBron James. The Lakers, and this is interesting because I would not have, and I guess the perception is that the Lakers are rebuilding. I wouldn't think of them as a team rebuilding. They just went and got Luka Doncic. Am I missing something? Are the Lakers a rebuilding team? Because I certainly wouldn't see it that way.
I mean, I know that they're trying to figure out what they're going to do with Austin Reeves. I know he declined his player option. Right. And it sounds like the intention between both sides is to have a long-term deal between the two of them. But I mean, obviously LeBron is wanting to keep his options open, right. And figure out what he's wanting to do.
So the story, as I understand it, is LeBron just exercised a player option and is basically saying, I love the Lakers. I think they're great. But if they're going to rebuild, I kind of want to go try to win a championship. I don't have any problem with that. And I know he's bounced around a little bit. It's only interesting because of all the drama surrounding his son getting there and possibly playing with his son and all that stuff. But LeBron's going to be, 41 next year? He is still insanely productive. We talk about Tom Brady and his longevity a lot, but LeBron, I mean, Tommy, LeBron still played 35 minutes a game last year, played in 70 of 82, shot 50%, scored almost 25 points a game. He basically went 25, 8, and 8, still shooting at a high percentage, playing 35 minutes a game. Like he helps every single team in the NBA if he were to go there. So, you know, there's going to be a contract involved because he makes like $50 million a year right now for the Lakers. It'd be hard to imagine turning that down if you were going to go somewhere else. So who can pay him? What can he do? Would he take a discount? Is he even allowed to take it? I have no idea. But him not wanting to be, you know, part of a rebuilding process, I got no problem with that. You build options into your contracts for a reason. And if you want to step away and try to go win a championship, I mean, he knows, like, he probably doesn't like the conversation about him versus Jordan either. There's that one big difference is Jordan's been lethal in the, you know, in the finals, and LeBron is not. He still won a bunch of them. He just lost a lot of them too, which Jordan, of course, did not. So if he wants to go win another one, I got no problem with it. And I think it's an interesting storyline. Where could he go to help somebody win a title?
Well, I think there are two things with the Lakers that are kind of looming large out there this offseason. Number one is, what do they do from a front court perspective? Because again, I mean, remember they moved Anthony Davis away, right?
That was their issue, right?
That was a major issue. And, you know, I think that it's pretty clear that they don't have the firepower down low to be able to compete in the Western Conference. And I mean, look at a team, and obviously the Thunder are the champions, but look at other teams in that conference that have really strong front courts. The Timberwolves, I think of them, and Rudy Gobert, like they have an elite front court, and the Lakers don't have much of a presence down low. That's one thing. Number two is, what kind of depth do they have? Because once you go from LeBron and Doncic and Austin Reeves, there's a pretty steep and severe drop off after that from their bench. And we saw both teams in the NBA Finals have a tremendous amount of depth, and it was a very balanced lineup. Very balanced roster for both the Thunder and the Pacers. There were a lot of players that can contribute, and there really wasn't much of a drop-off when the top guys had to take a rest, right? And so I do think that those are two major issues that if I'm LeBron James, I'm looking at for the Lakers. Like, how are you guys, Rob Pelinka and J.J. Redick, how are you going to address the front court, and how are you going to address the fact that we don't have much of a bench?
Well, and look, the other thing is, too, like, he and Luka have always said, like, Luka reminds me of LeBron. Like, they're the comp. Luka's comp was always LeBron to me. It always has been. So they're pretty similar players. Is that also the best and most effective roster usage? Probably not. Right. I probably not, because they're both the same kind of player. But my thing with LeBron is, like, he legitimately helps any team he goes to win a title. So it's not going to be Oklahoma City that he would potentially be able to land with. What team could he make sense with that could go back to Cleveland? Obviously, that has a lot of ties. They're really good. They're that close, probably. I think that is, first and foremost, the most interesting. And then I think you kind of have to work your down from there. Like, where could he go? Where would he go? Because he could go anywhere, but where could he go to win a title? Boston's off the table. I don't think he's going to Indiana, you know, to give them the year without Tyrese Halliburton. I'm just trying to think of the teams that were sort of in the mix here. Denver? I don't know. Like,
yeah, I don't think there's a good fit in Denver. I mean,
it'd be interesting going to Milwaukee.
Could he go with Giannis? Could he go to Phoenix?
Houston
for a
is
year?
The team.
I mean, I think, yeah, Phoenix could be a team.
Trade away Durant. They did trade away.
Yeah, they traded away Durant, but yeah, they're looking probably for some firepower to replace, you know, Durant.
Could he
for
go
sure
play with Kevin Durant in Houston? Can Houston even afford that? I you know, they made their move to sort of go get the old guy to mix in with the young guys, and I think I like that move.
Could he go
them.
To the Clippers? Could he? It sounds like James Harden is going to re-sign with the Clippers and cross the street there and play with Harden, team up with him.
Man, that would be hard because I would imagine he really does like appreciate his time with the Lakers. That would be kind of rough. I think Houston's interesting. I don't know if they can afford it, but what if they got Kevin Durant and LeBron James? Those two guys, they never have played together, have they? They've always kind of talked about it. Maybe. I don't know. That's probably stupid. NBA fans are probably like, you idiot. There's no way he could go to Houston now. But it's just one that popped into my head of like, who's close enough that he could go help win a title? Because again, like his production has not waned. He's still so flipping good. The Sixers, I mean, if you could give them a healthy year, you know what's a really interesting one, and this would never happen? The Mavericks. They have Anthony Davis. Go get a quick reunion with Kyrie Irving. He's got a history with Kyrie Irving. He's got a history with Anthony Davis. He's played and won championships with both of those guys. And oh, by the way, they just drafted Cooper Flagg. Are you kidding me? Like, that would be – now, that one would be wild. Could you imagine – oh, man. The fact that they won the lottery and are bailing them out, what if they just landed LeBron for a year to go try to win it? Like, are you kidding me? Reunites with Anthony Davis's boy. That would be epic. Go play for Jason Kidd, who beat him in a finals with the Mavericks. That would be – the NBA is good at creating storylines. That one would be one of the top ones ever if he were to go play for the Mavericks. Go get it done. You want to redeem yourself, Nico Harrison? Go get LeBron there for a year or two.
I think at the end of the day, I think he's going to end up back with the Lakers. I mean, I think that this is something where
he's trying to put the pressure on.
He's putting the pressure on them to try to, fill in the gaps and put the pieces together to have a championship team for this coming season. I mean, how many more years does he have realistically? And so
how many years are we going to say that?
Right. And I wouldn't blame him. I wouldn't blame him if he's like, look, I'm not going to keep doing this year after year after year and have a rebuild and sit through that and all of that. I'm 41 years old. I know my son's on the team and all of that, but I got to win now. Like, my clock is ticking. The time is running out. Show me that you can fill in the gaps that we need, because between him and Doncic and Reeves, they've got really good star power right there. But outside of that, who do they have on their roster?
Well, they'd probably spike cut his son, I would imagine. But I think he will end up back there too. But I do think there's probably some reality to, like, how much better can we get, guys? Like, what can we do to make this? Because if you're building around he and Doncic, you're going to have a chance in any year you play. So how many small pieces can they go acquire to try and slap it together to make a run? I mean, I think you have to try if you're the Lakers, don't you? Like, are you really wanting to go full rebuild? Luka's in the prime of his career. Why wouldn't you want to try while you have LeBron there? LeBron and Luka?
Absolutely. And why would you make that trade to bring Luka to LA to just like not go all in right now? They brought him in there to play alongside LeBron.
And you can do both. That's the stupidity of the trade from the Mavericks. You can both go all in and have your building block of the future all at one time. You can go all in now and then still remain competitive and rebuild around Luka in a year or two. That's the stupidity of the trade from the Mavericks standpoint. Luka is the kind of player that you're never going to be terrible when you have him. And so, yeah, I'm with you. I think he'll stay. I think they'll try to figure out. They'll get a big or two, and they'll try to make it work. At this point, he's to me, he has entered the Brady thing of me. Like, I don't want him to be done playing, like, ever. I just want to keep seeing how much longer he can produce at this level at his age. Tommy, our birthdays are close together, LeBron and I's. Like, we're pretty much the same age. I played pool volleyball and jammed my hand about 10 days ago now, and I still can't make a fist. Watching this guy at his age play 70 games plus the playoffs in an NBA season every year and produce at the level he's at, it blows my mind.
I mean, you are the pinnacle of health and fitness.
I'm peak athleticism.
You really are. So, I mean, when I look at LeBron, I think of you every time.
Yes. Like, if we're, you're two stallions out in the wild, you know, like you just can't rein it in. But it's, you know, it's getting a little harder in this age for me, but not for LeBron. He's still able to produce at that high level like we both could 20 years ago. You know, it's just it's crazy to watch. How much, like, do you even try to keep up with the insanity of the NBA offseason?
No,
like, I really don't. I'm just like, what? What in the world? Like, how are we supposed to keep up with this? The Kevin Durant trade flew totally under the radar. DeAndre Ayton, by the way, is hitting free agency. Speaking of the Lakers, maybe that could be interesting. USA team, there's a couple more other headlines. USA soccer gets a big win last night as we get ready for the World Cup. I don't fully understand what the Gold Cup is. I think I don't fully understand why any of it matters because we're going to get auto bid in the World Cup. But I do like seeing that Team USA is winning meaningful games because they better make a dang impression in the World Cup. That happened. And then the other big storyline that sort of happened is this Jake Retzlaff story for BYU. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I have.
So BYU, who is your defending Big 12 champion, at least in the regular season, right? Did they get the regular season championship and then lose it to Arizona State?
Yes.
Either way, they won 11. They won 11 games last year. He's going to be gone, most likely. You know, there are strict moral policies there, and he had to admit to a, he had to admit to a sexual relationship of some kind. He's being sued because there's an accusation that it was not consensual. He says it was. Either way, it was a sexual relationship that he admitted to that goes against the school standards. We've seen this forever with BYU. He's either going to be suspended a long time by them just for that part, despite the accusations. And so he's going to transfer. And so all of a sudden, this high-level quarterback is going to enter the market. He threw for 3,000 yards, ran for 400, had 26 total touchdowns. He's not the best quarterback in the world. And again, I'm not even talking about the accusations or any of that. I'm just from a football perspective, because I do think this impacts the Big 12 greatly. He's on the market. Where does a guy like him land this late in the game?
Well, I mean, I think there are a number of teams out there that are, you know, I'm thinking of mid-level SEC or Big Ten teams that, you know, could get an upgrade at quarterback right away. But I mean, I think the question also becomes, will he face any kind of punishment from the NCAA? Obviously, we know what BYU was planning on doing, or you know, had he not left and whatever, because of their strict guidelines and all of that. Will there be any other punishment? We don't know that. It's too early to be able to talk about that. But what's interesting about all of it is that, you know, this has happened a lot. Like, there have been a lot of BYU players that have been dismissed from their teams and that have had to transfer and leave and whatever, high profile players, because of the strict moral code that BYU has in place. And that's even separate from some of the other accusations that Retzlaff is facing right now. But that certainly puts a big blow to BYU, because they were really good a year ago. And what do they do moving forward, you know, coming up with this season?
I don't know. They got the top quarterback prospect in the class, but I don't think he'll be ready. Or is he? He's still got a senior season to play in high school. They landed another big fish. He's one of the top players. What's interesting is we're not going to see what it impacts him in the polls. Did you see the Big 12 is getting rid of its preseason poll?
Which I love. I think that's the best thing in the world.
I don't care too much about the preseason polls, but I think I do like their existence. Like, I don't put a lot of stock into them, but I do like the fact that it at least tries to give us a base level. Arizona State, of course, predicted to finish last year and then ended up winning the Big 12. I think I read no team other than Texas in the last decade or so has received a first place vote and finished in first. But none of that even bothers me. I do think early on that the problem is, you're asking us, the media, to put this together with the chaos of the transfer portal. Of course it's not going to be right. But it at least for some of us, I'll put myself in this category, who cannot go through and follow what every single team, like I don't know what West Virginia's done in the portal, right? Like it
but I don't think, I mean, nobody knows. Nobody knows. Even the people, even the coaches. I mean, the coaches maybe more than anybody else, but the media, like the media votes or whatever for a preseason poll, they don't, nobody knows. Like, it's impossible.
They're still going to do the players. They're still going to do preseason player list, which is good. I like that. Listen, I think I wish that in like the top 25s and stuff, like people say, oh, they're so dumb, they're pointless. And I'm like, no, they're not pointless. They shouldn't be used for like what the CFP does. They should have no bearing there. They're not pointless though, because seeing that number, I don't care what anybody says, seeing that number in front of a team adds to the buildup of a game. When you've got a number in front of the team, whether they are actually that good or not, which we don't typically know at the beginning of the season, it adds to the intrigue of a game. It just does. And I don't ever want to lose that. So, you know, preseason conference poll, I don't really care. But I hope we don't ever lose like a preseason top 25 or something like that, because that does early in the season, like it adds to the fun of a game. Whether those two teams in week 10 end up being any good doesn't really matter. In week one, when we're watching the game, it feels big because we see those dumb little numbers in front of their name.
I like the fact that it's just a guess. So like, why don't, like, let's just all go into it knowing that nobody has any idea. And let's just let the games play out and we'll figure it out as we go.
This is the preseason media. This isn't anything that impacts your viewing pleasure. So don't think like you're not going to know who's ranked or anything. This is just that preseason poll. And you'll see a lot of hand-wringing about, I can't believe they did this.
And now, digging deeper with the teams you follow, it's another Sports Daily Insider interview on KFH.
All right, and welcome back in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. We are joined now by Jalen Thompson, a Royals insider. You can find Jalen's work at the KC Star. You can find him on social at Jalen Thompson. Jalen, welcome in. How are you this morning?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Good. Are we hearing from you from Seattle right now? Did you make the trip up? Out?
I did not make the trip to Seattle. So
it's a long
one. I will be following the games, though, from home.
You and the rest of us, Jalen, will be staying up late with the Royals. So we look at it, not the good week that maybe we'd hoped for. The home woes through June are behind us now. So are the Monday days off. I kind of like that they have to go right on the road and just keep powering through here. Seattle just came off 3 extra inning games in a row, by the way. So their bullpen's going to be taxed without a day off. But again, if the Royals aren't going to be good at home, they might as well be good on the road, and they get 7 straight here on the road this week.
Yeah, they need to come through this week on the road, because it's at a point in the season where it's not early anymore. We're in the second half of the season, 84 games in, I believe. It's around that point. The Royals have to get it done. If they want to make the playoffs, you know, be considered a playoff contender, to be considered among the teams that can get to, quote unquote, the promised land that they want to get to, right now they are not that team. And I know that they keep saying they're in a rut, they'll turn around. But usually a rut is something that isn't prolonged. This has been prolonged for a while, and I think the Royals have to figure it out. If they don't figure it out, you're looking at July, which starts this week, and the trade deadline is at the end of the month, and you got pieces that other teams could possibly want. Do you decide to make those moves, or do you keep the band together? Because right now, it's not looking good.
Is there anything concrete that you can take away from the fact that the Royals have struggled so mightily at home? The fact that they went 0-6 in their last homestand, 1-5 in the one they just wrapped up. It's been a rough time at Kauffman Stadium in the month of June. Is there anything that you can take away that, like, you can point at and say that's the reason why, or is it all kind of fluky?
I think it's, like you said, it's all kind of fluky. I have never seen a team struggle so much in their home park. I mean, that's your home. That's your place where you know all the angles, all the gaps, all the lines. You know how the ball plays off the wall. You know how, you know, just where to be successful, because you play there. That is your place. And you can't fault Jonathan India for saying a couple of games ago, you know, we feel like we're kind of overswinging a little bit at home. And he even took the blame and for saying he was overswinging at home. But we can't, you can't use that excuse. This is your home park. I can't put my finger on what it is, but it just seems like they don't play well at home. And one win in a month span at home is not good enough at all.
No, I mean, the whole month is not good enough at all. You brought up the trade deadline. They'll have pieces. I've kind of like, I feel like, Jalen, there is a world where they can both buy and sell at the deadline. I don't think by the deadline they're going to be so far out of this that it's like, all right, we got to go to full sell mode. But a guy like Seth Lugo will be one of the most attractive names floated out there. We've heard the Royals rumored for guys like Jaren Durant. Yeah, for guys like Jaren Durant. So, I mean, is there a world where they could move away a piece like Seth Lugo, but add a piece like Jaren Durant? Because I kind of feel like there is.
So I see what you're doing there, Jacob. You know, hedging the bets a little bit. I see you.
Yeah.
I think it is. I think so. Seth Lugo has a player option at the end of this year. He can decide if he wants to come back or he wants to be an unrestricted free agent. And looking at what he's owed,
he'll be an unrestricted
$15 million.
Yeah,
that's the player option. He can get more than that on the open market easily for how he's pitched. So he'll be a free agent pretty much. I can't see him opting into that when he can get a long term deal, right? So maybe you do move Seth Lugo. Maybe you can survive without Seth Lugo if Cole Reagans comes back and he's healthy again. Then you still have five suitable starters, and maybe that is what you can do to infuse this team with offense. But I'm not moving Seth Lugo unless I get a quality bat back, because otherwise, what's the point of doing that? Your prospects, you use everyone in the system that can impact the team right now. And the way I look at it as, if you go on the road this week, seven games, like you mentioned, Jacob, like you mentioned, Tommy, and let's say you go 4-3, is that enough to keep everyone together? Or if you go 1-6, then do you start saying, hey, do we want to sell high on some of our pieces? So these are things they have to consider.
It was an absolutely brutal homestand for Jack Caglione. And I think it's safe to say he's been struggling and figuring out his way at the big league level. And really the microcosm of just the struggles happened the way that he ended the first game against the Dodgers, grounding into that double play, bases loaded, first pitch he saw with the Royals down by one in the ninth inning. I think overall, we all have to, you know, keep in mind that he's going to take his lumps at the big league level, and it's going to take some time to get ready. But obviously, there were expectations for him coming in that he could be the spark that the Royals offense needed. It really hasn't turned out that way.
Yeah, you're right, Tommy. And I think a lot of it, too, is Jack Caglione, like I said, this is his first full professional season. Like, he was just drafted last year in July from the University of Florida. So the waves that he's made in a full year is impressive in his own regard. But you're seeing now that this is a reason why guys take 2 years, 3 years at the minor league level before they're ready to come up to the big leagues. And I still think it can turn around for Jack Caglione. And the reason why I think it can turn around, because I look at another guy that did the same exact thing that he did in with the Athletics, Nick Kurtz. Nick Kurtz is a guy that he's hitting the baseball. He has 12 home runs now or something of that nature. Jack Caglione can do the same exact thing. But right now, he's just in a point where the pitchers got a book on him and they know how to attack him. And now he has to make the adjustment in order to be successful.
Yeah, look, the Royals just have to be patient. There's nothing else they can really do. Just let him work through it. Kurtz is a good example. Bobby Witt Jr. is a good example. Bobby Witt Jr. came up and he did not have the best rookie year. And he had far more time seasoning in the minor league level than Jack Caglione. They're just going to have to let it, you know, let it ride out. It's not all that different than Renfro and Melendez, except you see a light at the end of the tunnel with Jack Caglione. Is it going to be a detriment, though, to the team to so much that it limits their ability to win games? Because I would say of the list of things that is troubling the Royals right now, Jack Caglione's production is pretty far down the list of things that are the reason that they're struggling right now.
I totally agree. Because people have to realize, too, the Royals did not bring up Jack Caglione to count on him to carry the offense. He was brought up to help spark something, to help give, you know, a boost where he can. The guys that are going to be counted on are the guys that they pay the big money to. Bobby Witt Jr., Salvador Perez, those guys, Vinny Pasquantino, Michael Garcia, I'm throwing him in that mix, Jonathan India. Those five guys have to carry the load for the Royals. Otherwise, the offense is not going to go how it wants to go. They aren't going to score runs. And there's a reason why they have one run score multiple times this season. If you look at Sunday's game, Jonathan India gets on base. Bobby Witt Jr. doubles him home. Then you're looking at Bobby's on second. Markel moves in the third, one out. You have two chances to get Bobby Witt Jr. in from third base to get another run on the board. You didn't do it. The Dodgers are throwing a bullpen game. And Salvador Perez and Vinny Pasquantino did not come through. They finished 0-for-8 against the Dodgers' bullpen arms yesterday. That cannot happen if the Royals want to be a team that's successful. When you go back to their series in Texas, what was the thing that they did? They hit home runs. When was the last time the Royals hit multiple home runs since that Texas game? I can't remember, right?
Yeah.
I don't think it has happened, right? Bobby hit a home run on Saturday, but, I mean, they have to add more and more of those home runs into the fold. And I know people say, oh, hitting the home run is hard. It is. But the Royals, they can do it. They have to show it.
Well, and it's about stacking wins in a row, and then the Royals have not been good at that lately at all. In the month of June, they really have not, you know, outside of a couple of moments here and there, been able to string together wins. They've got an opportunity here on the road away from Kauffman Stadium, where they've struggled so mightily recently. You've got four games against the Mariners kicking off tonight. And in this series against Seattle, the Royals will throw all of their pitchers except for Chris Bubich in this particular four-game series. But it's not going to be super easy for the Royals because of the pitchers that they will face with the Mariners. You've got George Kirby, obviously coming back from injury, but he's been good in his career. Logan Gilbert, Brian Wu has been really good. It's going to be a tough stretch for the Royals, but they're taking on a Seattle team that currently has the third wild card spot in the American League, and that's the spot that the Royals need to get to.
Yeah, exactly right, Tommy. And on the offensive side of things for Seattle, Julio Rodriguez, Kyle Rowley, Randy Arozarena, three guys that absolutely can hit Royals pitching. They've shown it in their career time after time. So it's not going to be an easy lineup to go through. And the Royals do play better on the road. You got to give them credit for that. They do play better on the road. But they have to look at this series. If I'm in that clubhouse, if I was part of the Royals, I'm looking at that series as we have to take 6 out of 7. You have to take 6 out of 7 to get back to where you are around 500 and you are in the mix again. You're 6 games under right now, 39-45. You have to get back in the race. Otherwise, you're looking at the All-Star break, and wouldn't it be a shame if you're at the All-Star break and you're 10 games out, 12 games out? That's tough. That's a tough way to be.
It is. It is everybody else. I mean, they'd be that far behind Seattle if they had a bad series. But none of these teams outside of Seattle, Tampa, and maybe Toronto seem like they're very good either. I think this purgatory, unless the Royals get hot, but even if they keep losing, I think they're just gonna hover right here because none of these teams are gonna run away with it.
Let me ask you guys a question. Do you guys think the Royals, would 81 wins be satisfactory for the Royals, a 500 season?
We talked about that. A satisfactory season, that is a good question. We're going to have to think about that. Let's stew on it. We've got we've got to get a break here.
For next week.
Yeah, cliffhanger. 8-1. That's an interesting question. Hopefully it's better than that. Jalen Thompson, find his work at KC Star. Jalen, we'll talk to him next week. You know, back to Jalen's question, Tommy, I don't think 81 wins would be satisfactory.
I don't think that gets the job done, and I don't see any indication that they're going to be able to do what they need to do to get over that.
Look, if they salvage it, it's fine. It's not the end of the world. But if our expectation was for this team, mine was to compete for the World Series. I had them going out of the American League. Too good of a starting rotation not to. But we'll see. They play tonight right here on KFH in Seattle facing the Mariners. Pregame coverage begins at 8:30. You can listen live right here on the air on KFH or on the Odyssey app. A win to start it would be nice. We'll have Felix Johnson in tomorrow to talk a little Chiefs, talk a little NFL. Tommy, welcome back home. Get some aloe for that sunburn, man.
I know. Appreciate it. It's gives me some color, I guess.
It's a color. It is a color. That is correct. I'd say, look, we'll be back tomorrow. See you, everybody.